This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, it is time. It's 7 o'clock. On the line is our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. We bring Ross Tucker in right now. How'd I do?
Oh, man. That was like a 9.5, okay. 9.75. Yeah. I mean, that was as close to a 10 as it gets because it's the way you, like, the way you ended, delicious.
Yes.
Like the breath. And the delicious was just so good.
Thank you. Okay, good. And I still have room to improve. I still have room to grow. So I like that, Ross. I like that.
Well, that's right. I can't just go ahead and give it to you. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, you got to work for it.
No, I'm down. Hey,
we kind of live in a golden age of mayonnaise where, Will Levis advertises for Hellman's as well.
Yeah.
You've got other, you know, I didn't even know that other mayo companies existed until various ones started sponsoring bowl games and everything.
Yeah.
I feel like, I feel like there's something good about having a mayo war instead of a cola war.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a fair point.
Yeah,
I had only ever heard of Hellman's mayonnaise until that bowl game.
You mean Duke?
Yeah, it was actually Duke's.
Duke Mayo.
Yeah, Duke's. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'd only ever heard of.
We misheard
you.
I didn't even know. I didn't even know that there was another company.
Right.
But I'm
right.
Not saying them because the segment sponsored by Hellman's, yeah. Mayo game day, be delicious.
Be delicious, yes. Ross Tucker joining us. All right, Ross, so we're very excited this week here. Texans are 5-1, and they head up to Green Bay. Where does C.J. Stroud versus Jordan Love stack up on your intrigue level for quarterback battles so far this season?
Ooh, good question. I would say high.
Yeah.
It feels like these guys are battling to be sort of the apple of our eye of like the new kids on the block.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you got the old heads like Aaron Rodgers. There's not many of them left. Then you've got kind of the guys in their prime, Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, I guess Herbert, etc. Burrow. But, like, the new breed or the young guys, I don't know if they're new, they're not rookies, but the young guys, the young guns, feels like it's Stroud and Jordan Love very high on that list of, like, the young guns. And this is the battle for young gun supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But so then this will be, you know, a talking point before and after this game, especially depending on how the game goes. All right, Jordan Love versus C.J. Stroud. It felt like Jordan Love was kind of flying under the radar in a lot of regards, despite a very promising season last year. Where are you right now on, okay, confidence about either of those guys moving forward in their career?
Very high for both. Very high. You know, I guess I would feel like I'm higher on Stroud. And I would say that for two reasons. One is, you know, he did what he did as a rookie, right? Like, that is super impressive. And I feel like the Packers sort of have a better infrastructure in place, or historically have had a better infrastructure in place for a young quarterback to excel like Jordan Love. I mean, they kind of have a formula there in Green Bay that works incredibly well. And that's not a knock on Jordan Love. I just think it's part of the reason for his success. Whereas, you know, there is no formula like that in Houston. There is no track record like that. So the fact that Stroud did it in year one as opposed to year three, and I feel like Stroud really, I feel like he overcame. I mean, they couldn't really run it that well last year. The O-line wasn't great. I mean, he overcame a lot, whereas for Jordan Love, you know, they did a really good job of drafting O-line, tight ends, and receivers around him. That would be the thing in Jordan Love's favor, is that, you know, all these guys around him are so young and can grow and get better with him, which, you know, I guess you could say that about Nico Collins and Dell to some extent, but that's not the case with, like, Stephon Diggs or Robert Woods or whatever.
Yeah, and I guess with the big difference between just them being rookie quarterbacks or not last year is that Matt LaFleur has had his system in place up there, so Jordan Love has had time in that system as well as everybody else on the offense. And I think that's where we are with the Texans right now, Ross, where, I mean, without overthinking it, the flat-out addition of Joe Mixon and potentially a different version of Damian Pierce this year made a big difference, and the run game all of a sudden was back on track. It was one game versus the Patriots, but how confident should I feel that, okay, this is for real and the Texans are going to be able to credibly run the ball as long as Joe Mixon is healthy and possibly Damian Pierce if he keeps this up?
So I don't know. I wouldn't be that confident yet. Let's see him do it back-to-back weeks. Mm-hmm. Before I would get too excited about it. Although, my big takeaway from that game, other than I thought Drake May did some positive things and that's a good sign for the Patriots, is that I'm, like, amazed that Joe Mixon is seemingly this critical, this important to the Texans' run game and Texans' team. You know, I think I told you guys this before, but I really thought a couple years ago, watching Joe, I thought he was kind of done. You know, he had gotten the ball so much in high school, so much at OU, and even with the Bengals. I mean, he got a lot of touches with the Bengals. And I think 2 years ago, I thought, man, I think this guy might be out of juice. And then last year, he kind of had a bounce-back year. But even still, the Bengals didn't really love him. You know, they were ready to move on from him. And the Texans saw something there, and they brought him in. And, man, he's been fantastic for them this year.
He has. It's only been two games, Ross, because of the ankle injury. You know, he was out for three and a half games, basically. And your point is interesting to me, because now it's got me thinking, like, he didn't do much in training camp. He had a quad injury, but he looked healthy, worked out off to the side. They might have been managing him a little bit. So then he has his dynamite week one against the Colts. Then he sprains the ankle on the hip drop tackle in week two. He's gone for 3 weeks, and now he comes back here in week six, and he's amazing. I always wonder, when guys get very specific injuries like that, if it allows the rest of their body to just, especially a running back, not take all those hits. I'm anxious to see if the dynamic you're talking about, once Mixon has played 3, 4, 6 consecutive games, like, is he holding up in December, or does he look the way you thought he was looking maybe the last couple of years?
Well, that's the positive, I would say, about what we just said about Damian Pierce, or what Seth said about Damian Pierce. You know, if he can take some of the load off, that would be huge. because you need Mixon, it feels like, to be healthy later in the year. So I think that's significant. You know, I see this all the time, like in college football, because they know that their best play is usually running the quarterback. But they also know that if they run the quarterback too much and he gets hurt, that, like, the season's over and they're screwed. So it's like this dichotomy in, like, so many of these college games I call, where it's like they go in the game, yeah, we're going to really try to limit his touches, and, you know, we it's a long season and he's our guy. And then, like, the fourth quarter happens, or it's like a fourth down, or they get near the goal line, and, like, it's clear as day they're going to run the quarterback, yeah. Right? So for the Texans, that'll be the challenge for Slowick, is, like, trying to use Pierce as much as possible and not feeling like he always has to have Mixon in there for the, you know, for the every critical situation.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is Pierce has to prove that he can do it.
Yep, no doubt. Ross Tucker joining us. Insider Calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Ross, we would be remiss not to ask you about what the hell is going on up in Philadelphia with Nick Sirianni taunting fans after an unimpressive win over maybe the worst team in football, the Cleveland Browns.
Well, so there's a lot to it. And I guess the first thing I would tell you is that he is a very emotional guy in every way, right? Like, you guys remember him crying before the Super Bowl? Oh, yeah. And, like, you know, he's like a very emotional guy. And 2 years ago, sometimes he would give the business to the opposing fans, or he would look at the camera or whatever, right? And that's him. And the players kind of loved it. The players really like him. And I guess Brandon Graham and Jalen Hurts said after the game that during the bye week, they encouraged him to be more himself, to be more emotional and more passionate on the sidelines, like he was a couple years ago when they went to the Super Bowl. You know, because when that year, when they were killing everybody, Eagles fans kind of loved it. They're like, yeah, this guy's awesome. He's hilarious and whatever, right? And so the players encouraged him to do that. He obviously took it too far. Mm-hmm. You can never win doing that to your own fans. And so he apologized yesterday, and you know, I'm ready to move on. A lot of people don't want to move on. A lot of people think he should be fired, to which I would say, I mean, he's 3-for-3 in his 3 years of the team making the playoffs. They're 3-2 this year. If someone could explain to me how firing Sirianni gives the Eagles a better chance to have success this year, then I'm all ears. I just don't think that that's the case. I think that that is, you know, the way fans are, which is irrational, and making a judgment based on something that they've seen and didn't like.
There hasn't been a lot of hard reflection by Eagles fans thinking, you know, we did run Andy Reid out of here for not being good enough, for merely making 4 NFC championship games and 1 Super Bowl, that, okay, maybe we should be a little bit more patient here.
Exactly. I think if you check out my social media, at Ross Tucker NFL, you know, a bunch of people are already, you know, disagreeing with me or saying, no, get him out of here. You know, it's so easy for fans, and it's especially this way in Philadelphia, to always just want to make a change, always just want to get rid of that guy, fire that guy. And it feels like sometimes it's like a sacrifice, like a sacrificial lamb, that they never really have a great, like, then what? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Get rid of him. I don't like him. Fire him. Okay. Then what? Who's your interim head coach? Is it Vic Fangio? Is it Kellen Moore? Do you think that that helps those guys be better at their job calling the offensive plays or defensive plays? You know, the players like him. It just... And that's part of what makes you know, what we do fun, I guess, is that fans have emotional reactions to things, and that's how they respond. And but there's not typically a lot of long-term thought process, yeah, I guess, for some of these instantaneous reactions.
Ross, you'll be glad to know Nick Caserio is coming on with us, but we scheduled it for tomorrow. When we were scheduling it, I made sure to do it on Wednesday because we had you coming on Tuesday. I didn't want you to get bumped for Nick again.
I love it.
Yeah.
By the way, you know what you should ask him about? I can't remember who told me this, but I think Belichick, like, loved Joe Mixon. If you go back, there might have been quotes from Belichick, you know, Mixon's, like, second, third, or fourth year, where Belichick said something like he thinks he's the best back in the league or as good as any back in the league. Yeah. And so, obviously, Caserio was with Bill, I think, when he still – when was Caserio's first year in Houston?
2021.
Yeah,
so I think, you know, 1920 is when Belichick said that.
Yep.
Because I always think about that. Like, Belichick loved Mixon, just like he loved Corey Dillon, which is why he got Corey Dillon when I was there.
Yeah.
Very similar
Fred
players.
Fred Taylor.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
He loves bringing in those old guys.
Yep. Clock-killing Corey Dillon. Yep, for sure. Ross Tucker is our Odyssey NFL insider. Hey, Ross, you're on Saturday, Wake Forest at UConn, and then you're on Westwood One for the Sunday night game, right? Jets and Steelers?
That's right. So Saturday, I'm going to hang out. I'm actually going to go to your childhood house, Sean, and still see if there's Zima in the fridge.
Okay.
Maybe have a couple of Zimas from when you were in eighth grade.
They're stashed in the crawl space.
Someone else lives in that house. But had my family still lived in a house, there was definitely Zima in that fridge back in the time frame you're talking about, Ross. I can promise you.
Well, you know, whatever happened to Zima? They had such a first mover advantage.
They did. They were like a one hit wonder, man. They were like Spandau Ballet or Flock of Seagulls, like Zima. They were here for like 3 weeks and then they were gone. I don't know what happened to them.
Oh man, I could tell a lot of stories, but I'll just leave it at that. But yes, and then. Sunday night, that Jets-Steelers game even just got juicier. I mean, the Jets need to win the game. They're in danger of being – it feels like Top Gun when they said they would get Maverick up in 10 minutes and the bald, you know, admiral or whatever is like, 10 minutes, BS, this thing will be over in 2 minutes. Well, the Jets better win a game or this thing will be over.
Yes, that's a great point. Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. And I'll do better next week.
Delicious.
Ross, we'll talk to you later, man. Travel safe. All right, see ya.
The biggest pivot when you talk about Sirianni and where he is right now in the estimation of fans and him being combative with them, I would say the year that Bill O'Brien went off on the fan in the tunnel there, it was in a very disappointing loss to the Broncos that day, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
It was not received as well. And then all of a sudden, when the Texans made the playoffs and made the push, I think it was reinterpreted in a lot of people's minds as like, yeah, that's just fiery Bill O'Brien. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So it all depends on team success.
Yeah.
You either think it's badass if the team is doing well, or it's like signs of turmoil if it's not going well.
Yeah, it was super badass after they beat Buffalo in that playoff game. Not quite as badass as they were coughing up a 24-0 lead a week later against the Chiefs.
And as far as we're trying to get Ross out on time. We always keep him too long. I would say Zima was just simply rebranded as White Claw and reemerged like 10 years later. And there you go.
Under a mask.
White Claw's better. The whole thing about a Zima was the kids that were drinking Zimas at a party, you were kind of like, all right, man, like, what are you trying to be your mom? What's going on here? Whereas White Claw got mass adoption and acceptance by more. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely
one way
did.
The Zoomers are superior to Gen X in that regard.
Yep.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
By the way, Sirianni, who I believe you have in your cadre of coaches, you've already won the first head coach fire contest with Sala.
Yeah.
But as long as we're looking at the ones you and I took, Seth and I each took four coaches to try to get the first one, to try to get right the first one who would get fired. Seth had Robert Sala in his four, so he wins. You also had Nick Sirianni. He is 12-1, along with Brian Daboll, who I think you may also have. I can't remember. But Doug Peterson is still the runaway favorite to be the next one. He might get dropped in the ocean on the way back from England if they lose to the Patriots next week.
My whole handicapping for which coach was going to get fired was based largely on just interpersonal stuff, because that's the stuff that people have no appetite for these days.
Yeah.
The NFL's gotten soft when it comes to interpersonal conflict.
Mm-hmm.
John, I played in a day when I was in a locker room where a player brought an actual weapon into the facility because of an issue he was having with a coach once. And that guy was on the team for like two more years after that. It was different. It was a different time back then. Now everything's out on social media and people make a big deal out of everything. So the interpersonal stuff, it just gets writ large. And that's what it was with Sala. I didn't want Sala to get fired. I didn't actually thump my chest when he got fired because I liked Robert Sala.
Sure.
And I feel like he was a little bit of a victim of the circumstances.
Yep.
But that was just such a messy interpersonal situation going into it, and it was involving a quarterback. There was no way in hell he was going to survive unless they were going off on a tear and dominating the league.
Involving a quarterback with power. That was the biggest thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and with power means also they just got a big contract.
Yeah.
So same thing with Sirianni. There's all kinds of smoke about his relationship with Jalen Hurts, and Jalen Hurts just got his contract. They're not getting rid of him anytime soon.
No.
When you're an offensive-minded coach in this situation, you're the first to go. They got to find out exactly, okay, what's the elixir for this offense?
It is funny. You know what? That's interesting that you bring that up. The three top guys on the board for next head coach fired, Doug Peterson -150 in Jacksonville. What do they have at quarterback? Guy who just got a big contract, who's not playing well. Mike McCarthy is number two on this list now. I'm curious if you're buying that. Mike McCarthy is 4-1 for Jerry Jones to fire. I'm with you. I have the same reaction.
The only thing we know for certain that will get you fired in Dallas is winning multiple Super Bowls. That's the only certainty.
Right.
You know, like, no measure of incompetence is a good guide for whether or not the guy's going to get fired.
And getting credit for it instead of Jerry.
That's Sean, I watched that Detroit game yesterday.
Yeah.
The versus the Cowboys.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, for one, if anybody's making excuses for them based on the fact that their defense was so banged up, then you're just completely ignoring the incompetence of the offense in that game. But then, okay, you've got backups out there. And you think, like, okay, well, they've got backups, but at least they'll play hard. My God, I've never seen so many backups make business decisions. They did not want to tackle David Montgomery.
Nope.
Like, David Montgomery, full credit to him. He had a monster performance.
Yeah.
But those dudes were actively trying to not tackle him at times.
It was just bumping
into him, throwing glancing. What a pathetic
display. Trayvon Diggs. I know one of the ones you're talking. Trayvon Diggs went viral for all the wrong reasons. In that game, was that
Montgomery's run to the right?
To the right,
Trayvon Diggs is just like standing there,
yeah, and just kind of like bumping off of him.
I'm gonna just
bump into him. But it is interesting. The eight coaches who are at the top of the board for next head coach to get fired, most of them are guys who have highly paid quarterbacks, like recently highly paid quarterbacks on their team. Doug Peterson, favorite, Trevor Lawrence. Mike McCarthy, second on the board. Dak Prescott, highest paid quarterback in football. Kevin Stefanski, third on the board. We know that story. He's got Deshaun Watson. We'll save that for the Pettycast. And then you got Antonio Pierce. They don't have anybody at quarterback. You got Dennis Allen, I guess Derek Carr. But then Zach Taylor. I mean, Joe Burrow is in year one or two of his extension. Brian Daboll, Daniel Jones is in year two of his extension. Nick Sirianni. Jalen Hurts is early on in his $50 million a year contract. These are all guys, and you're right, man. Like, in the power struggle, the money's going to win. You know, the money and the quarterback are going to win.
Whether the owner wants it that way or not. You know, like, in Jacksonville, the whole other dynamic there is that Trent Baalke is just so despised, the GM in Jacksonville, just so thoroughly despised. Not just by, I mean, Boselli goes on the radio every week and just blasts Baalke's decisions, and that's on Jaguars radio. Baalke has got the owner Shad Khan wrapped around his little finger.
Yep.
When Shad Khan comes out and says that this is the most talented team the Jaguars have ever had, like with a clear non-comprehension of Jaguars history or any eras before he owned it, everybody in Jacksonville thinks, like, oh, he's getting that straight from Trent Baalke.
He's programmed.
Like,
yeah.
This GM has convinced the owner that everything is the problem except the GM.
Can I tell you the reason why I'm rooting for the Yankees in the ALCS? And I know I've really riled up some people with this. I actually got texts from a few friends of mine, like, what the hell are you talking about? You're rooting for the Yankees. Here's why. And let me run this reason by you and see if you accept this or if I need to be talked out of this. My whole thing about rooting, once my team is eliminated, my whole thing about rooting for teams, by and large, is will these playoffs yield another fan base that I have to deal with moving forward?
Okay.
So, because here's the thing. If the Yankees win a World Series, what are you telling me? Yankee fans are going to be cocky about it? Yankee fans are already cocky. Yankee fans already act like they win the World Series every year. Now, I get that them having actually won one gives a little more oomph to their argument that, you know, that they're the best team, that they won the championship. I can deal with it. I really can. Yankee fans are obnoxious all the time. I don't need the city of Cleveland all of a sudden becoming this new city that is feeling themselves a little bit over baseball or football, for that matter.
But it won't last. I mean, if there's one thing you know about Cleveland, it's they might have a little bit of success here and it'd be awesome. A little bit of success. Let's say they win the World Series. Good for them.
Yeah.
It's not going to last the same way or leave such an enduring imprint on the city and the fan base as the Yankees are permanently stuck in a position where the Yankees are like the Cowboys. Their fans. Yeah. They take on a level of superiority that they just haven't earned any time recently.
Yeah.
And yet, that's where they're at. So I always want to stick it to those fans.
Okay. I mean, it's a personal preference. I like the downtrodden, in this case, Cleveland, to stay downtrodden. I don't need them feeling themselves. That's one more And I think I'm maybe more out there than you are dealing with these fans because I'm a little more interactive
That's
on
true.
The socials and things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're not, you like, you put stuff out there that you know is going to get you a lot of hate. I'm just not wired that same way.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so not wired for violence the way you are.
I choose it every day when I wake up. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I remember when you almost walked out, walked off the job because they threatened us with mandatory drug tests, and you're like, and then you peed in a cup and threw it in our program director's face.
That's exactly
it was crazy.
What I did.
It was one of the most baller moments I've ever seen.
I wish someone was filming it. It would have, that's
from a hardcore party animal,
right?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Me and Mario Edwards. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. As far as the Texans go. The Texans player catching the most strays right now, Dalton Schultz. Dalton Schultz was kept after a 20-point win. There were very few Texans players catching any sort of heat from anybody. Yeah. I will commend the fan base at large for the most part, except for a few little kind of random texts. People about town who are like, 41-21. They finally won in New England, but ... I would say most everybody was pretty appropriately really, really excited about it. Dalton Schultz, though, could not escape even the most rational of Texan fans. This was a play, I think, there were a few plays in that game that got people worked up about Dalton Schultz. But this is the only one we have on the highlight sheet right here.
CJ takes the snap, surveying the field. Now steps to his right, close to the end zone, bobbled and picked off. Oh my goodness, it's Jones. He's going to bring it out. 5, 10, 15, straight ahead and dragged down across the 25-yard line.
All right. That's a hell of a return by Marcus Jones, by the way. That was a nice job taking that. Go Cougs, taking it out of the end zone there. The interception, Seth, a lot of people blaming Schultz for the interception because he, at the very least, didn't knock the ball down or something.
Yeah.
I think even more so, it's the entirety of the season has been lackluster for Schultz, statistically at least so far. There's probably some fantasy football animus baked into some of this for people. But on Sunday, 4 catches on 8 targets, just 27 yards, had a big drop on a third down that people felt he should catch. He was the one targeted on the interception. CJ's passer rating when targeting Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs was in the 140s. CJ's passer rating when targeting Dalton Schultz on Sunday was 18.2.
Yeah, so the two big ones there that you could have had back are, okay, the interception, should he have been either... I was watching the game yesterday and just watching specific throws. The tough thing is when you watch Diggs, man, I have such an appreciation for him as just a total receiver. All of the little things he does so well, but then especially just plucking the ball out of the air, the way, I mean, he just... He's catching the ball with his hands in tough spots and everything. And I envision, okay, in that exact same body positioning and scenario and everything there, even though he's much smaller than Dalton Schultz, I think Stephon Diggs would have caught the ball.
Yeah.
So I don't blame, and that's like, I don't blame Dalton Schultz completely, except that I thought that Patriots game, there was a lot of evidence of, okay, Dalton Schultz is who he is, that he's going to get some targets. He's going to do some good things, but he's not a perennial Pro Bowl candidate or anything like that. And then when he drops the easy stuff, especially in critical situations, which happened last year, even in good games that he had down the stretch and in the playoffs, he still had some really bad drops too. I think he is what he is. And they just gave him a contract. I think the contract is going to be a reasonable contract over the course, you know, as the new contracts are given out.
Yeah.
But he's just, he's not going to be a perennial threat necessarily. He's Dalton Schultz.
Yeah. And I think the thing so far this year, why people are feeling it with Dalton Schultz is that we know, even amidst what you were talking about last year, he made some huge catches, too, that big-time tight ends make. He had some plays down in the red zone, a few touchdown catches where he went to the ground to get them. The biggest one that he had, won a touchdown, but might have saved the season with the catch he had where he stole an interception away from a defensive back in that Titans game that Case Keenum started. We haven't seen any of those plays that offset the bad plays yet this year.
And he's had some adequate blocking moments, but on good plays, and with the blocking side of it too, it's always with like, all right, hey, good job, Dalton Schultz. Yeah. Hey, look at that. You got in front of him on that one. But then there's just he's never going to be George Kittle when it comes to being a blocker. With Cade Stover, I think there's upside there. He's still very raw, and he has a lot of bad reps as a blocker. With Dalton Schultz, it always just feels like you're like, all right, well, hey, good for you, good for you. He's not going to be the driving force behind an intimidating group of tight ends.
He's probably somebody that body language doesn't do him any favors either. You know, for the body language critics, I think he's, and I'm literally. I'm reading multiple texts right now that talk about how he just stands around and he doesn't look like he cares after he drops the ball.
But he also gets really chippy. I think sometimes when he's just standing around, he's genuinely depressed. There was when the Texans were backed up against the Bills and Ogunbowale got tackled. Oh, it was like when they opened up with those runs at the beginning of the Bills game and everybody wanted Bobby Slowick fired on the spot. It was another example where, like, okay, Dalton Schultz actually, his guy tackled Ogunbowale, but it technically wasn't really his fault. Schultz was washing the player who was blitzing, but if he had washed him more aggressively, it would have been a clearer read for Ogunbowale. Ogunbowale probably should have bounced that play out, but the read wasn't clear enough because he just wasn't, because Schultz just wasn't quite good enough. He got his job done, but he wasn't quite good enough.
Shout out to Patrick Storm, who just sent me the link to this article. This is from 20 minutes ago when we were talking to Ross Tucker, who said...
Oh, wait. Let me say it first. You're talking about the Bill Belichick quote?
Yes. Yeah.
He said, Mixon is maybe the best back in the league. He's probably the best back in the league. He runs so hard. He's so hard to tackle.
Yep. That's exactly it, Seth. Good guess.
I didn't want to give Texan Storm the credit. I did. I looked it up while Ross said it. I had already seen it while Ross said it. I didn't even know that he messaged us.
December 16th, 2019 is when Bill Belichick said that. Probably, quote, the best back in the league, Joe Mixon.
That was after Mixon had 25 carries for 136 yards and 3 catches for 20 yards in the game.
Against the Patriots?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was a good Patriots team. Well, 2019. It's a good Patriots team, not a great Patriots team. That was Brady's last year.
I mean, because then we get back into David Johnson territory. We're like, okay, we're a running back. I don't want to be talking about what happened 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing that happened with the Bengals was simply that the Bengals transformed into a different type of offense that just didn't suit what Joe Mixon could do. And then the Bengals also had salary cap considerations. Mm-hmm. So it was a combination of a couple things for why they got rid of Joe Mixon. This scheme and the way they operate is much better suits the way Joe Mixon operates. Is when he can line up 7 yards behind the quarterback with the QB under center and then just hit it and be full speed by the time you're making that first cut.
Man, Ross is right, though, and I know it's something you've talked about, I've talked about. Boy, if Damian can be a guy who gives you, like he did on Sunday, 8 to 10 good carries a game, and you only have to have Mixon touching the ball 15, 20 at the most times, that's going to come in awfully handy in December and January. Keeping that odometer down in terms of number of hits he's taken. Middle screen texts in. Okay, middle screen's backing me up on my rooting methodology here in the playoffs. I said I'm rooting for the Yankees in the ALCS just because I don't need Cleveland becoming this new city that all of a sudden is feeling themselves because they now have a world. I know they won one in like 1948. I'm talking about people who are still, alive and with their faculties by and large. Middle screen says, Sean explains why I rooted for the Patriots back in the day. I didn't want another new hotshot team to win unless it was my Houston Texans. And I did the same thing too. Like, okay, well, what's the Patriot fans are obnoxious. What, they're going to be more obnoxious with an seventh Super Bowl ring?
That's true. It's almost that you can consolidate your hatred and just keep it there.
Yeah.
In a way, it's a kind of like in a weird way, there was a little bit more clarity in the world when the Cold War was going on. Because it was simple to be like, oh, okay, it's the Soviets. Those are the bad guys, and they're the root cause of everything.
If that helps.
And now all of a sudden, you actually got to use your thinking brain to try to figure out who the bad guys
are.
Right.
I mean, I guess...
Likewise, I'd prefer to just know that the Yankees are the evil empire.
Right, okay. Now, the big difference there is the Yankees haven't won anything since 2009? So it has been a while. But I don't think this is going to change the type of Yankee fan that I deal with on the regular. I think it does change Cleveland people significantly if they win a champ. Hell, probably changed us when we finally won a World Series back in 2017,
You went through a rough stretch, too, with Browns fans when you were doing your national show because of Cleveland fans because of Freddie Kitchens.
Yes.
Because you were a... You were versus the Freddie Kitchens truthers.
Yes.
And it was a long fight.
Yeah. You know? And I hold grudges. I am petty. Yeah. I am petty. And I told them, I said, Freddie Kitchens is a moron. And who Baker Mayfield, you know who Freddie Kitchens was? Freddie Kitchens was Baker Mayfield's Nathaniel Hackett. That's who he was. And it proved to be true.
I should make the petty cast today for stealing Texans Storm Thunder away from him.
I was just trying to
help out the show.
I know. I was wondering why you were swinging in on a chandelier like a pirate. Like just.
I was like, no. I was proud of myself for my. I found that quote within like 7 seconds of Ross citing it. So I was like, very proud of myself on that.
Shoulder
one.
Bumps Patrick Storm out of the way. That was great.
Sorry, Patrick Storm. Yep. That's it for you. You'll get your chance, kid.
Speaking of Damian Pierce, man. Damian Pierce met with the media yesterday. It is fun having good Damian Pierce, good at football. He's always been a good person. Good at football Damian Pierce back in our lives. How did it feel to get that touchdown? Gives us the play-by-play on how it played out. And I love his quotes on the running back room. What with all these guys healthy, what can they do? We'll hear from Damian Pierce coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
First down, Texans at the Houston 46. Clock at 8 minutes to go. 13-point lead. Here's a toss to Pierce. Running right. Pierce across the 50. Pierce breaks a tackle. 45-40 right sideline. The 30, 20, 15, 10, 5. Rock and roll. He's got the touchdown. Damian Pierce to the house.
Amazing. It's been a long 3.5 weeks, but through rigorous training and being relentless in my rehab with the help of the athletic training staff and the support of my teammates, everything went smooth and I was able to reap the benefits on Sunday.
That was Damian Pierce. They put Damian out there for a press conference yesterday, which always makes me very happy. I love listening to Damian Pierce talk, and it's great to see him happy. It's great to see him productive. Let's hope this keeps up, because boy, they could really use the version of Damian Pierce that they got on that run on Sunday to close out that game against the New England Patriots. Hey, Damian Pierce, take us through the TD. How did that play out?
Man, the big one was kind of like, I think the easiest way to word it, our running back coach always says run through the smoke. Like, it might not look like the best lane to hit, but trust that when you get there, guys are going to clear out. And that was just a prime example of that. Titus did a great job of not giving up on the playback side. Even though he thought about it, they be on the lineman, bro. Like, if you put your hands in the wrong spot, it's an automatic flag. Like, come on, bro, this football. But he thought about it, but Titus finished great on the backside. Boom, he was able to clear his guy out, and I was able to cut right off of Titus and break a tackle. Tank got just enough of, zero to let me get the corner of the pylon, and the rest on film. When I was in a hot touchdown, bro, what you got to, bro. I don't care how tired you is as a running back. Like, that's one of the worst things as a running back. Like, say I would have got to one and Joe to win it. Like, me and Joe had a fight, bro.
Yeah, Damian Pierce looking out for his fantasy owners. That would have been the worst thing if I went out at the one and Joe got to go in. That was great. I love having Damian Pierce back in our lives, Seth.
And they would have had to fight about it.
Yeah.
The thing about that play was it's interesting because the Texans have done a lot of they've kind of changed some things up a little bit with the play calling in the run game, and without getting into too much like zone run versus gap scheme and all that stuff. I think I've seen a lot of people say, "Look, okay, good, they're abandoning the outside zone." Well, okay, that big play of Damian Pierce was an outside zone run. And it was not perfectly blocked by any stretch of the imagination. And yet, this is what you get with outside zone, is it doesn't always have to be perfectly blocked. The biggest key is that you get the defenders running sideways. And on that play, one of the running backs was just hoofing it out to the side. One of the linebackers was running laterally. The other linebacker was blocked by C.J. Stroud because C.J. Stroud carried out the fake really well. So the other linebacker was stuck back in the middle of the field thinking it might be bootleg. And Damian, to his credit, doing something he didn't do in the preseason, was made a decision. And then, like he said, he like a race car driver, you drive right towards the crash and it'll clear out of your way. So he hit it upfield. And that was the Damian, the breaking tackles Damian, that it wasn't a very, very clear path, but it was enough of a path, and he took it and he hit it vertically and was able to break a couple tackles. and then showed some explosiveness that I don't think we really saw out of him last year. That was really nice to see.
Yeah.
That was good. Now there, I want to see it more. There were some plays in that game where I thought he looked a little indecisive behind imperfect blocking, but that was a really good example of like the upside of Dameon Pierce.
Everybody seemed to be happy for him, like universally. And yeah. It stands to reason, but like I'm talking about like outwardly even more happy than usual about one particular play. Like everybody who they asked about it, super happy for Dameon. This time tomorrow, we'll be talking to Nick Caserio on the show, so we'll ask him about Dameon Pierce tomorrow on this show for sure. Dameon was asked yesterday, how did that feel to get into the end zone after everything you've gone through the last year and a half?
Man, you know, anytime you get a touchdown, it's a party. So that's how I treat it, man. So as soon as I crossed the goal line, you know, got the hands up from the referee, man, I just wanted to find the guys, you know. It ain't about me. It took all 11 to get there, so all 11 going to party when we get to the end zone, man. But on a more personal, you know, note, like, it felt great just to be able to come back from rehab and, you know, not miss a step. Because, like, that was one of my main concerns. Like, kind of going back to her question, like, how's it going to feel Sunday? Am I going to be able to, like, you know, still have my same step? Am I going to lose a step Sunday? But I felt good Sunday, man. And that run just kind of, you know, gave me confidence in my mind that, okay, all right, you good, bro. You can roll, so.
That might be the biggest thing. Like, that very last thing there, even before he said the word confidence, that's what I thought of as he's describing that. I'm like, it feels like for Dameon, it's been way more mental than physical. The mental has maybe bled into the physical. As you pointed out, Seth, he didn't run last season nearly like the wrecking ball he was in his rookie year. And some of that was probably due to hesitancy or a lack of confidence in his ability to fit into the scheme. That's what I hope that run means for him. Like now, like he's seeing things differently, you know? Yeah, like he's more decisive.
It was one of the things D'Amico talked about yesterday too, was just getting some good reps on film for the offensive line. I think he was talking about the offensive line at the time. So you can be able to show them, like, yep, this is the way it's supposed to work. And that is the way D'Amico teaches and like he uses a lot of coaching tape from other players around the league that are doing things well with the defense. He uses teaching tape from the 49ers. I would imagine this year he's able to show a lot of teaching tape with the Texans defense from last year,
mm-hmm.
or they, you know, and then this year they've had good examples, and that's the most powerful way of doing it. Like, oh yeah, okay, now let's just keep doing this more and more and more. It's a little bit like Henry Winkler in The Waterboy when he's at the party and
right.
he says, "Now that you've had some success, you know what it feels like. Now we can do more of this."
Mm-hmm.
It's D'Amico's like a more manly version of Henry Winkler.
I would say significantly more manly version
yes.
of Henry Winkler. One more from Dameon Pierce. With everybody healthy, what can this running back room be this season?
No, the healthier the running back room, the better. So, you know, it's not an easy job. You know, it's a crazy job. This sport is just brutal on everyone's body, as y'all all know. But, you know, the healthier the running back room, the more consistent we can be in the run game and just help CJ out, just help those guys in the pass game out, because we got the playmakers. We got the playmakers, and they can do their job even when it's hard. So imagine us giving them an easy way out, like just making their job that much more easier, let them guys go ball, because we got the dog. We got dogs all around on both sides of the ball, but more specifically in their wide receiver room, man, those guys are just waiting to make a play. Like, you can hit this guy, you hit that guy. It's all up to us, you know, just giving them time in the pass game, you know, because we're responsible for that as well, and also alleviating them in the run game when things aren't going so great, when teams scheme up for those guys. You know, how can we not be one-dimensional and force those guys to have to play those guys, have to cover those guys in one-on-one situations? So that's all a healthy running back room does. You know, it makes it more favorable for those guys on the outside, and that's what we want to do.
Dude, he's saying what you've been saying since they've been playing cover two all season long, which is
yeah.
if we can just move the football on the ground, if we can provide a credible threat to
yeah.
the defense, man, then all those other guys, all those dogs we got in the wide receiver room, they're going to go eat.
Yeah, you make it too easy for the opposing defense when they can slow your offense down just by saying, like, but oh, we just have to move our safeties back. That's the way to, we can stop the Texans if we move the safeties back. That's all we have to do.
Yep.
The way you counteract that is, all right, if you're going to do that, we're going to run the football. And it's been cool. You know, there's a pendulum swinging back the other way where people are acknowledging and understanding, all right, man, it's not a matter of just using the pass to set up the run. We got to get better at running the football.
Mm-hmm.
And running backs do matter more this year, I think, than they have in previous years. You still can't trust them to stay healthy. But it's been fun to watch some of the teams do it on the ground. And is they, all right, around the league, they're playing more conservatively, and they've got all these defensive backs on the field, and we're going to punish them with that.
Yep.
And it's still a passing league first and foremost, but there's just a little bit more of a more, there's a premium on physicality right now, and I don't think a lot of teams are necessarily set up to be physical football teams. And that's where I think D'Amico's mindset and his willingness to be flexible, both on offense and defense, it hopefully is an advantage for the Texans by the end of the season, if they can build on the run game.
All right, we get petty on Tuesday. It's a petty Tuesday here on Payne and Pendergast, and we get to our peak pettiness at 8 o'clock during the Pettycast. Man, this is where we highlight our own pettiness and some impressive pettiness of many, many others around the sports world. And, man, there were some good ones this weekend that we will get to. The Pettycast, we do it every Tuesday, comes up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld at Odyssey Podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.